Hello, all of you out there in Radioland. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, we hope your computer stays locked on our website, kptz.org. Our website's more than a way to listen to today's show. For example, you can find the biographies of all of our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town. You can even sample some of our earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as a podcast. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who owns that green and gold bus I see around town? You know, the one that reads Climate Chaos on the front. On the back, there's a giant sign that reads Green New Deal. That's someone who obviously cares about the environment. But beyond that, I haven't a clue. Who are those brave or foolish people on parasails off the coast at North Beach? Now that the fall winds are kicking up, well, it's a rather risky sport. And now it seems like there are more recumbent bikes than ever. The herd is proliferating as fast as the deer herd. Who are those guys? Jefferson County is full of all sorts of fascinating characters. This show, Our Town, tries to profile a few of the singular people who live here. But the show is only a half hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So it's a synopsis. We try to get our guests to talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Ian Jablonski, the operations manager for water resources for the city of Port Townsend. Water resources are becoming a hot topic, even here in the Emerald State. Welcome to the show, Ian.
Hello.
Let's start at the very beginning. Are you a local boy born and bred in Jefferson County?
No, I ended up coming here to participate at the Wooden Boat School.
I see. Well, where were you born?
I was born in Midland, Michigan.
Did you live there through your teenage years?
Up until high school, and then I ended up going to Massachusetts for high school before going back to Michigan for college.
Okay. Now, I'm always a bit curious about people's high school experience because it can be pretty formative. And one of the things that happens is other kids label each other. Everyone sort of says, oh, he's a band geek, she's a nerd, whatever. And people are sort of aware what other people think of them, but they don't necessarily agree. Do you have any sense what did they think of you?
Can't say that I fit any particular pigeonhole. I was in track and such when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm. So you hung out mainly with athletic types?
Yes, most of my close friends were also participating in the track program as well.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense that people tend to hang out with things, particularly if they enjoy what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So did you run in many races?
Well, I participated in the fall in cross country, and then during the springtime, it was regular track.
Wow. That takes a lot of stamina, I would think.
Yes.
So you decided to go back to college in Michigan. Why did you pick a college there?
I was interested in going back to the University of Michigan, where I'd grown up nearby, and I also had a ROTC scholarship there, so they said, we'll give you a scholarship to go back there.
That's always a good inducement.
Yes.
Now, were you one of these kids who really had it all figured out? You knew exactly what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Oh, probably from about the time I was in high school, I knew that I wanted to fly. And so that was one of the driving factors, is to join the Navy so that I could fly aircraft in the Navy.
Yeah, well, my dad was a Navy pilot, so I certainly understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you graduated from college, then did you go directly into the Navy?
Yes, I was commissioned as an ensign and went down to Pensacola, Florida to go through flight school down there and then joined a squadron in Virginia.
Aha. How long does flight school take?
It depends, but I got through fairly quickly, so it was actually just under a year to get my wings. Some of the training, depending on your pipeline and all of that, might take a year and a half or so.
And when you go to flight school, do you learn to fly all different kinds of planes, or do they sort of funnel you in one direction?
You typically end up flying several different airplanes as you're going through the training pipeline from the basic to the advanced program. When you finally get your wings, you're selected to go into a specific type of fleet aircraft, and then you're going to transition over to a different school to learn to fly that particular aircraft.
Now, I know in the past, 20/20 eyesight has been very important, but is it still, given today's technology and ways to improve people's seeing? I mean, is that still a big deal for pilots?
They do have programs where they were providing people with LASIK surgery so that they could pilot the aircraft if you required corrective vision.
Ah, well, that's good to hear.
Yes.
Yeah, because technology has certainly improved. Mm-hmm. So your squadron, your first squadron, was in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And where did you go? Where did you fly to or from? Aircraft carriers?
Yeah, I was stationed on an aircraft carrier for a couple of deployments, and we ended up going the first one into the Indian Ocean through the Suez Canal, and then my next deployment, we stayed in the Mediterranean.
Are you on a ship for a long stretch of time each deployment?
As you're going through the workup cycle, you usually go out to sea for a few weeks at a time, a month, maybe 2 months at a time. And then on the deployment, you're out to sea for 6 months or maybe a little longer, depending on what's going on in the world.
Wow, that must be tough.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be tough on relationships back home.
It was a little easier for me because I wasn't married at the time.
Well, yeah, that would make it easier, you know. So, but if you were single, still it would be difficult. When you're out like that and you're flying and you have to land on the carrier, I would think that would be scary, even though I guess you don't admit it when you're doing it.
There can be times that it's a little more challenging than others. Usually the nice clear weather daytime, it's a lot more fun than trying to land at night in the middle of a thunderstorm.
Yeah, I don't think so. So you were in the military for a number of years?
I spent 10 years on active duty and then joined the reserves and finished my career in the reserves.
Okay. When you transitioned over to the reserves, what did you do for the other part of your jobs?
My time in the reserves was spent with flag staffs, both on aircraft carriers and ashore. So I was with NATO Command ashore, as well as PACOM, which was the Pacific Command.
I'm not sure I understand the term. It's a military term, I guess, flag staffs.
That would be the admiral or general staffs.
Okay, I get you. So technically you weren't in the military, but that sounds very much like you were in the military.
You're still in the military in the reserves, although you're doing that as 1 weekend a month, typically.
Yeah, that's
and then 2 weeks during the...
Because I was under the impression that most reserve people, like, they might be an accountant, and then 2 weekends a month they go with the reserves, but they have jobs that aren't completely related. But it sounds like you were very much involved with the military all the way.
So when I started out in the reserves, I was actually in the wooden boat school. I was working on boats for a couple of years, and then I got a job with the city as the water resources specialist. While I was doing all of those jobs, I would take 1 weekend a month serving with the reserves, and then a couple of weeks, and oftentimes more than that during the year, doing various either short deployments or going overseas to participate in military exercises.
Okay. Now, everyone in Port Townsend is very familiar with the Wooden Boat School. What got you interested in the Wooden Boat School here? Because you were not out here. You were in Michigan, I guess, and then Virginia. What's the transition?
The Navy transferred me out here, and I was stationed in Bremerton on the Nimitz.
Okay, so that's
so
much closer.
Close by,
yeah.
Yes.
So you heard about the Wooden Boat School, and you came up and visited. Was that how it started?
Yes, I did. I stopped by, and I liked the program, and it seemed like a good transition, leaving active duty to figure out what I wanted to do after that phase of my career.
Had you been a woodworking hobbyist in your garage before that?
I had done a little bit of woodworking, but not much, and I learned a lot at the Wooden Boat School, which helped in a lot of different facets.
Yeah. Well, I gather over the years the Wooden Boat School has changed and evolved. How long did it last while you were there? Was it a year or 2 years?
The program was 6 months when
I started.
6 months? Yes.
Okay. When you came out, obviously you were ready to be employed somewhere. So what happened?
So I was hired at one of the local companies here in town, and I spent about a year and a half working at two different companies.
Why did you decide that that wasn't something you wanted to do for 20 or 30 years, that you wanted to move on to something else?
I think it was dealing a lot with the toxic chemicals in some of the building.
Yeah, that is something.
I was involved in a lot of the painting and fiberglass work, and I liked the wood boat building part, but not as much the chemicals used in some of the more modern boat building.
So you applied to the city for a job. Was there a posting that you happened to see? What prompted you there?
They were advertising for a watershed specialist. The city was in the process of trying to avoid filtering their water at the time. And one of the conditions was that they wanted more city involvement within the watershed and monitoring the activities within the watershed. So I was hired with the Forest Service.
Did you have experience doing that, or did you learn it on the job?
I learned most of it on the job. Some of my background doing flight instruction and a degree in biology helped.
Yeah, I think it would. The term you use is watershed management. Explain what it means.
Watershed management encompasses the whole supervision of activities within the watershed. So in our case, we have recreation going on within the watershed.
Yeah.
There's commercial logging within the watershed. There's people that want to use the watershed for harvesting things like commercial forest products, salal, ferns. People go hunting in the watershed. They're hiking. People drive through the watershed in their vehicles. They only access a very small portion of the watershed. One of the things that we wanted to do is to ensure that the activities that were happening were not degrading the water quality.
So when you speak of the watershed in general, you're not specifically talking about one reservoir. What are you talking about?
We're talking about the whole area that's draining into a particular river basin. Or in the case of our reservoirs, we do have two reservoirs. And we have a smaller area of land around those reservoirs that drain into the reservoir.
Can you tell our listeners what reservoirs are and how much they hold?
So we have Lord's Lake Reservoir, which is northwest of Quilcene, and that holds 500 million gallons of water. City Lake Reservoir, which is at the south end of Discovery Bay, holds about 140 million gallons of water.
It seems like a lot to me.
If you looked at how much water the city's using, which is roughly about 1 million gallons a day for the city customers, you know, that's almost 2 years of water supply. But when you factor in what the paper mill is using, it's more a matter of months of water supply.
Yeah. Well, I think we should tell our listeners a little bit of the history, how it all came about, because if I understand it correctly, it goes back to the 1920s, the deal for water between the city and the mill. Can you explain it?
The city had a small water supply on Snow Creek dating back to 1905, 1906. And we used that for the city until the mill decided to move to Port Townsend. The mill required a lot more water than was available in Snow Creek.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, they built one diversion on the Big Quilcene River. And then in the 1950s, they built another diversion on the Little Quilcene River along with Lord's Lake.
So the mill and the city have been in partnership for all these many years.
Yes.
How much water is permitted with your ongoing contract, the city versus the mill?
The city has water rights on the Big Quilcene River for a little over 19 million gallons. Mm-hmm. And on the Little Quilcene River, we have water right for over 6 million gallons. The city and mill typically combined use in the neighborhood of about 13 million gallons a day. The city's water use, as I said, is a little under 1 million gallons a day. The mill water use fluctuates between probably 10 and 12 million gallons a day.
And there's a big pipeline that brings the water down to the city and the mill, correct?
That's one of the amazing parts of the system is that it's a gravity-fed water system. So wow. There's no pumping involved. They built the diversions at a higher altitude than our lake reservoirs. And so the water flows by gravity from our diversions into the lakes and to Port Townsend.
That's pretty amazing. And the pipeline is underground, right?
Yes, except for where it crosses some rivers, it's all below ground.
Every pipeline gets a leak now and then. How do you figure that out and how do you repair it?
Oftentimes, with the pressure in the line, you'll see a geyser of water coming up if we do have a leak. In that case, a neighbor or someone walking along the pipeline typically reports it. If there's a smaller leak, the people that are operating and maintaining the pipeline are regularly traversing the length of the line, and they'll see the damp spot on the ground, and then we'll have to investigate.
But the pipeline's about, what, 20 miles long?
28.5 miles from the Big Quilsing River.
Wow. Very complex. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. The show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. My guest today is Ian Jablonski, the Water Resources Manager for the City of Port Townsend. We've been discussing the pipelines, the reservoirs, and the amount of water that is used by the city and the mill. Now, the climate is changing, or at least many people believe the climate is changing. And here in the Pacific Northwest, we've had what, for this region, sort of some drought years, particularly, I think it was 2015.
Yes.
What happened there? Was there a lot of discussion about what we should do to prepare for shortages?
In that case, in 2015, we had almost no snow up in the mountains that year. We rely on that snowpack to feed the streams and to provide the necessary stream flow into the summer and early fall until we start getting the rains again. We temporarily raised the level in Lord's Lake and instituted some conservation measures between the city and the mill, which allowed us to survive that particular year's drought. As we look into the future, if we continue to have problems with decreasing snowpack, then we would probably be looking at expanding Lord's Lake Reservoir. And certainly as we continue on, we will be looking at conservation measures, both here within the city and at the mill. And I know the mill's been very aggressive on conserving water over the years. And as they update the plant there, they have been incorporating conservation measures, which saves water for the future.
I've read about some of that, and I really have made some great steps forward, I think. Mm-hmm. When I met you the other day, I came to the new plant that I think most people in Port Townsend aren't completely aware of the fact that until a couple of years ago, the water here was not treated, really. There was chlorine put in it, but it didn't go through the hoops and the big tanks that you got out there at the plant. Describe it to our listeners.
Our original water system was an unfiltered water system, so we took water out of the rivers. It went into City Lake or Lord's Lake and then City Lake, and then came from City Lake. We chlorinated the water to provide disinfection, and then it went into our tanks here in town before going out into our customers' water system. Mm-hmm. In 2017, we completed construction of a new membrane filtration treatment system. And the membrane filtration system is filtering down to 0.04 microns, which is removing sediment and potential biological pathogens. And we still chlorinate the water before we send it out into the system. The chlorinated water is stored in two reservoirs, and it receives the contact time for chlorine to do its disinfection.
When we were at the plant, I was really surprised when you showed me, essentially, you showed me the water as it came in. You had a bucket, and you took a little out, and it looked perfectly clear to me. And then you showed me sort of after it was separated and it was sludge. Can you explain that a little bit to everyone?
So the filters run for an hour and then we backwash them. And what you saw was the backwash water after about 60,000 gallons had been filtered in the course of 1 hour. You get things like algae and suspended sediment that's being removed from the water. That's the brown discoloration that you saw when the filter was backwashing.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. So even though the water looks perfectly clear when you hold up a glass of river water, there are still things in the water that you do remove.
Around the country, there have been several really serious situations with water contamination. I think the last one was in Michigan. Flint, Michigan, didn't they have a big problem?
Yeah, Flint, Michigan was dealing with a lead issue when they switched water sources. They switched to a river that was a lot more corrosive than the water that they were receiving from Detroit. Unfortunately, it caused the lead to dissolve from some of the piping that they had, particularly with the lead service lines to the homes.
What are we watching out for here? What are things that you're monitoring constantly?
One of the things we're constantly monitoring is the algae. Algae has the potential to have toxins. One of the nice things about our water system is that it filters out all of the algae from the water. So as long as the algae is intact, it's probably not releasing any toxins. We do monitor the development of the algae within the lake, so we sample regularly during the summertime, spring, summer, and fall to see what species of algae are in the lake and to see if we need to increase our testing to see what's going on. We had a little problem with some algae back in 2016. We had some toxic algae present, but no toxins were released into the water. We've been monitoring it since then, and we have not had any repeat circumstances of that.
Occasionally, I've seen signs talking about red bloom.
If you're looking at red bloom, you're probably looking at a saltwater-based algae, the red tide, which creates problems with eating shellfish. One of the issues with drinking water is more of the blue-green algae, which is actually a photosynthesizing bacteria. There's a number of different species. Toledo had a problem from the water that they were getting from Lake Erie, where they were having a large bloom and a lot of toxins being produced. We're fortunate that our water is turned over very rapidly within our reservoirs, so we don't have the same sort of stagnant conditions with fertilizers and such going into our reservoirs.
That can be a
so
problem.
We don't have the conditions that accelerate the growth of those blooms.
And I've always heard people say Cryptosporidium, that's a big problem. What is that?
Cryptosporidium is a small parasite. It's typically passed from the feces to the water from a warm-blooded animal. Their feces get in the water, someone ingests it. It reproduces in your digestive system. And the cryptosporidiosis disease causes vomiting, diarrhea, stomach cramps.
Lovely.
And that's one of the main reasons that we built the membrane filtration plant in order to deal with that, because chlorine is not an effective disinfectant agent against that particular organism. But when we have started testing for cryptosporidium, and we tested for probably about 7 years, we only found one organism in all of the water that we tested. So it's not a large problem for us.
Okay. I was talking to one guy who's a farmer, actually, and he told me that he believes in coming years that there will be more droughts and that there will be restrictions on water. Is your department sort of looking ahead and seeing the same scenario and thinking about how to react to that?
Definitely. We are trying to, again, look at the sizing of things like a reservoir. Do we need to expand the reservoir? How do we conserve water, such as when we're doing planting for parks? Are we using drought-tolerant type of plants that don't need a lot of watering? As we look into the future, there's a number of steps that you're going to have to be looking at as you plan for your water system.
someone told me, and this doesn't sound right to me, but who knows, that the city will come and plant a rain garden, she called it, in certain yards, if it's the right location. Now, that sounds pretty far-fetched to me. Have you heard of anything like that?
The city has done a lot of rain gardens in the public spaces. So if you're downtown, around City Hall, for instance, you'll notice these areas along the curb where they have a lot of plants growing, and those would be rain gardens. And they help to filter out the rainwater as it's before it's being discharged into the Sound and remove some of the pollutants from
that. But essentially, if you want one in your own front yard, you should do it yourself, right?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, and unless they're doing some major street improvements or something, then they may incorporate something like that.
But yeah, okay. Well, that makes sense. I thought it was a little far-fetched when she told me that, but you never can tell, right?
Yeah.
So you have lived now in Jefferson County for roughly how many years?
Let's see, maybe about 28 years now.
Wow. So if someone were to talk to you and say they were thinking about moving here, and what do you like about it? How would you respond to that?
Well, certainly the outdoors, being close to the water, having the mountains and all the recreational activities, if you enjoy the outdoor sports, but particularly the small town kind of atmosphere where you know a lot of the people as you walk around downtown. You're not fighting the traffic of some of the other cities around here.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, being able to walk to places or easily bicycle around.
Yeah, I noticed you rode your bicycle here today, so obviously that's something you take advantage of. Are you active in other outdoor activities?
Well, I certainly like things like sailing and fishing and hiking.
Well, you could almost say that's part of your job, the sailing and the fishing, right? You're looking at the water.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite, right? Looking ahead, there's always some discussion about growth for Port Townsend. Will the city grow? In terms of the water supply, I've been to some towns in California where literally they can't expand because they don't have the water. But it doesn't seem to me that we would face anything that drastic.
No, we're not currently limited at this point for their expected growth.
That's good to know. Believe it or not, we are basically out of time here. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I also want to thank my partner, John McPherson. He sits in the glass booth, and he makes us sound so much better when he edits out all our stumbles and mumbles. I want to thank the three people who are deeply devoted to this station, Larry Stein, Program Director, Kate Ingram, Station Manager, and Robert Ambrose, the Chairman of the Board. They all work very hard to improve KPTZ. I also want to thank you, the listener. KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, is a community radio station. We're all volunteers here. We give our time because we believe that Jefferson County needs a free local voice. We need your support, listeners. We need donations. We always need donations. We also need volunteers. If you're interested in maybe becoming a host or a DJ or doing one of the more technical jobs around here, we always can use volunteers. I want to thank my guest, Ian Jablonski. He is the Water Resources Manager for the City of Port Townsend, a very important job. Thank you so much for being on the show, Ian. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So, listener, I'm signing off. But please stay tuned to KPTZ 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.